Yo, what's up, guys? We're back. We're going to be doing the breakdown this week for UFC Fight Night 8. It's going to be at the UFC Apex in Las Vegas, Woodley versus Gilbert Burns. Before that, I just want to touch on a couple things. I do want to say I'm happy to announce that I have partnered with MMA Oddsbreakers. So I'm going to be giving a few picks over there, some premium bets, some write-ups, some reasoning as to why I'm doing these bets. You can get some insight onto as to, you know, what I like to pinpoint in betting, things like that. And it is going to, you know, come back, support the channel. So if you guys are interested in that, I am going to be leaving the link in the bio. Be really awesome if you guys go over there, support that. It is going to be my first week there. So hopefully, you know, we can get some interest and do well this week. But it's not going to change anything about this show at all. It's going to be the same exact format. Still going to be giving the most confident pick. Still going to be giving a parlay of the week. So nothing to worry about with that. It's just completely optional if you want to support that and support the channel that way. But I'm also going to be having Nick Kalikas, who is the main guy over there at MMAOddsBreakers.com. He's the guy that set the lines for UFC fights before, for LFA fights. So it's going to be a pretty interesting to have him on. It's pretty cool that he's decided to come on, and we're going to be doing a little bit of a breakdown of this card. I'm not sure if it's going to be the full card or just the main card. But if you guys have any questions for him, you know, leave them down in the comments below, and maybe I'll ask your question. But this video is obviously going to be about breaking down this UFC Fight Night, Woodley versus Gilbert Burns, and this is going to be a new format that I'm trying out. So let me know if you guys like this format a little more, if you guys like the old format, and we're going to get right into it though. First fight of the night, Chris Gutierrez, Vince Morales, and this is a bantamweight fight, so both these guys are going to be a little bit smaller in there. But Chris Gutierrez, you know, he put another win on the board in his third UFC appearance, won that split decision over Geraldo de Freitas. It was a competitive fight. Gutierrez, he's a good striker, good defensive movement. He likes to be a counter striker. Nice oblique kicks, round kicks to the legs, you know, good low kicks. He'll throw some nice check left hooks, some 1-2s. He's good at throwing the left hook moving backwards, and he'll also throw some nice front kicks to the body. He'll blitz forward with some straight punches to close the distance. Some nice front leg round kicks. He also will throw some spinning back fists, some spinning kicks. He's very fast. He's always feigning. He'll false start. Good at keeping fighters off balance. He will switch stances at times. He can get backed up and allow opponents to control the center, which isn't, you know, something that you have to take into account even more here, because this is going to be at the Apex. It's going to be in the smaller cage. So, you know, it could be a problem for him getting backed up here. He does have 6 knockouts, good durability. He's never been finished. But to be honest, you know, he's a guy that likes to touch and pull, you know, land, get out. He's not a guy that's looking for the finish. He's a point fighter. But he's an average grappler, I would say. Kind of a questionable defensive wrestler. He is solid in the clinch. He'll look, you know, for some hard knees to the body, but he can be taken down. He was out-grappled to losses versus guys like Timur Valiyev, Jared Saunders. But, you know, he will use some butterfly hooks or, you know, even give his back to scramble back up. He does attack some arm bars, some triangles. He'll use those submissions to scramble back to his feet. He'll roll for leg locks. He isn't really a guy that'll finish the submission, but he's decent at using it to create a scramble to stand back up. And he has one submission. He has a rear naked choke. Only been submitted one time. But when he did get taken down by Honey Barcelos, he did kind of allow Barcelos to pass his guard very easily. Barcelos landed some nasty elbows. But, you know, Vince Morales, I don't think is really going to test him on the mat like that. Vince Morales, you know, he's been nothing short of entertaining in the UFC. He's had all decisions, but they've been some fun back-and-forth wars. He even had a good war on the Dana White Contender Series. He did drop a decision in his last fight to Mino Lopez, but a lot of people feel like he won that fight. I actually felt like he won that fight. And I would say he's a good boxer. He's pretty light on his feet, wide stance, likes to kind of jump in and out. And fast, crisp hands, some nasty punching combinations. He's very accurate. Good jab. He'll double triple up on it. Likes to, you know, paw the jab out there to get his range. Then he'll start throwing the straight right. He has a good short left hook. And in the pocket, he will throw some, you know, clean punching combinations. He'll also, you know, throw some leaping right hands if you're backing up. His counter left hook backing up himself is pretty good. And when he lands clean, he could finish the fight. He's an aggressive guy, keeps a good pace up. And he will throw some occasional leg kicks, decent head kick. But the thing is, I mean, he can get stuck waiting a lot, not throw that much, even though he's walking you down. He's just not letting go. And he's heavy on his lead leg. He's susceptible to leg kicks. He's a little bit flat-footed. And in this fight, he has to go first more. He has to move, back Gutierrez up. And I would say he has kind of a questionable chin. He gets clipped and wobbled in a lot of fights, but he is durable in terms of he has good recoverability and a lot of heart. He'll take some shots, get dropped maybe, but come back later on. And he's definitely dangerous. He has five knockouts. I would say if there's a finish by strikes in this fight, it's likely going to be by Vince Morales. Morales isn't a grappler. He really will rarely go for takedowns. He is a former wrestler, but doesn't use it in MMA. I mean, if fighters initiate the clinch on him, he has improved his takedown defense. He's hard to take down, good sprawl, and he's good at not letting fighters cement position if they do get him down and bouncing right back up. So I feel like in this fight, it's going to be, mostly stand up here. It's kind of a power, a battle of power versus volume. Gutierrez, he's not a guy who's going to take risk. He's going to be on the outside, sticking and moving, throwing some kicks, trying to kind of avoid the battle. Gutierrez, he's a good point fighter, good footwork, throws more volume than Morales. And Morales has good boxing, he throws with bad intentions. But he needs to pick up the volume here, try to hurt Gutierrez, take him out. And if he can draw Gutierrez into a dogfight, that's to his benefit. I feel like he's the tougher guy. I felt like he won his last fight, but with the volume being low, it cost him a split decision. And it's interesting, this fight is very close. Morales, he's a guy that he's gonna have bad intentions when he hits, but he's so hittable, man. I mean, he gets hit a lot in a lot of his fights, and it's a close fight because in the smaller cage, it kind of I was favoring Chris Gutierrez to kind of just outpoint him, a John McDessie-esque type decision. But man, I mean, with the smaller cage, Morales hits harder. He's gonna be, walking him down. I'm gonna switch my pick, man. I'm going with Vince Morales. I think he's going to win a decision. It could even be a split decision. But I'm going to go with Vince Morales to get it done with pressure, with some boxing combos, landing the more significant shots, and just looking like the aggressor. And I think the smaller cage is going to work to his benefit here. So I'm going to go with Vince Morales via decision. Up next here, we have another bantamweight fight. And this fight, I'm actually pretty confident in. We have Casey Kenney taking on Luis Smolka. Casey Kenney's going to be making his fourth UFC start, but the first one coming off of a loss. He had that 7-fight winning streak snapped against Mirab Dvalishvili, and Kenny, he's looking to get back on the horse here. He's fighting 3 months later, trying to get back in the win column, and he's an aggressive, high-volume striker, packs some power for the division. He is hittable at times, not the greatest athlete, but he's good at bossing the fight, throwing the more volume, staying busy. And he's a grinder, he's a beast grappler, judo black belt, college wrestler, solid jiu-jitsu player. He did kind of get a taste of his own medicine versus Merab, but Smolka, he doesn't nearly have that physicality and wrestling prowess of Merab. But, at least Smolka, he has done fairly well in his second UFC stint. He returned at a new weight class of bantamweight. He's gone 2-1, and he's coming off a big first-round knockout in October. Smolka, he's always been a fighter who looks for the kill. Even being at flyweight, he has 14 finishes and his 16 wins. His opponent, Casey Kenney, has never been finished. And watching the tape on this fight, man, I really struggle to see many paths to victory for Luis Smolka. On the feet, I feel Kenny's going to be the fighter who's quicker, throwing harder shots. And that's something that's usually not happening for Kenny. Kenny's usually the slower guy, so in this fight, I think he's actually going to have a chance to get off a little more on the feet. I feel both guys are hittable, but Kenny throws with more bad intentions. He's just a bigger guy, I believe, as well. I know Smolka's a little taller, but he lacked the physicality even at flyweight. And Smolka's a grappler, but just lacks the physicality, like I said. I don't think he can deal with someone like Kenny. I don't think he can take Kenny down. And if he tries, I see him getting reversed. We've seen guys like Ray Borg, Tim Elliott ragdoll him, manhandle him, and he accepts bottom position in order to flow, look for sweeps, look for subs. In this fight, he's facing a guy in Casey Kenney who's an elite top game rider, great submission defense. I think that on the feet, Kenney will get the better of the striking, and if he doesn't or starts to feel the tide turning, He can hit a takedown at will and just control. I see this fight being one-way traffic with Kenny, you know, putting it to him. Kenny does get tired a little bit, and that's the only way I could see Smoke winning is by getting a crazy late finish, but I just don't think it's going to happen. Smoke has finished 14 of his 16 wins, only 2-4 in decisions, lost his last three decisions in a row. His opponent, you know, Casey Kenny, has never been finished, 7-2 in decisions. He's faced strong grapplers in all three of his UFC fights. He's faced a lot of submission artists, even faced guys like Tim Elliott and Brandon Royval, who are on this card. And, Ray Borg. And he didn't, or Brandon Royval's on this card, and he also fought Ray Borg. I'm sorry. And I think Kenny, you know, he's getting a good matchup here finally in the UFC. And I got him big here. I definitely think he should win. I think he should actually be a bigger favorite than he is. But I'm going with Casey Kenny to get the victory here via decision. And I'm going to make sure we have another potential fun fight. A couple more little guys here with Tim Elliott taking on Brandon Royval. And Brandon Royval, we got a little luck to be getting this matchup here. He is the current flyweight champion in LFA. He was set to go into the Dana White Contender Series. But, you know, instead he's getting the opportunity to jump right in against a notable name. So it's a big opportunity for him. Royval is an interesting prospect, but I'm not really super impressed on the feet. He is very high volume. He's pretty fast, pretty long for the division, nice kicks, good straights, and he will throw some heavy low kicks. He likes to throw some straights followed by a low body or head kick, so he will throw some punches, try to hide the kicks behind the punches. Good jab, he'll throw some 1-2s, nice short lead hook. He likes to spin, throw some spinning elbows, he'll mix some knees in. Creative striker. But the issue with Royval on the feet is, man, I mean, he has no game plan, bad defense, drops his hands, has his chin really there to be hit. He's there to be countered, and eventually he's going to get knocked out. Royval, you know, very tough when he gets hit. He'll come forward, try to get it back. He likes to drown opponents with volume, forward pressure, and then force them to shoot a takedown. He will probably, I mean, it's tough to say. I'm going to say he maybe is going to have the striking advantage here. But I wouldn't be shocked if he got tagged up, got hit with some good ones. Royval, he's never been finished by strikes. And at flyweight, you know, you can get away with more mistakes. He does have 3 KO TKO victories. And he's a grappler, man. I mean, he's a dangerous submission grappler, black belt in jiu-jitsu. Not afraid to attack submissions. And really doesn't have the wrestling, though. He doesn't shoot takedowns, poor takedown defense. The way he gets top position is kind of from forcing bad shots out of opponents, pressure on the feet, and just, you know, getting on top from them kind of panic wrestling or sweeping. And Royval, you know, his takedown defense is improving, but it still isn't very good. He can get taken down in the clinch. He can get taken down with wrestling shots. And most likely, Elliott's going to take him down here. When he fought UFC fighter Casey Kenny, Royval, he got taken down at will in that fight, got rode out. But I will say, you know, he is pretty tricky off of his back. Good guard, he's quick, he has good armbar triangle transitions. He'll attack Oma and Gogo Plata's, and, you know, he'll transition from submission to submission very quickly, change them together. He can get his guard passed due to being so aggressive, and, you know, it is a possibility that Tim Elliott will just ride him out for 3 rounds. But he's good at attacking leg locks, attacking subs and scrambles, you know, re-guarding. And he's not just going to be laying on his back. You know, he's always going to be trying to move, get it done. His cardio has been a little bit bad in some fights, but it's also been good in other fights. So it's a little bit weird. I'm not really sure what to think about his cardio in this one. But he's kind of a, you know, a guard sub guy. I mean, most of his wins have came by submission in bottom position. 6 submissions, and he's coming off of 2 quick armbar finishes. He actually had the fastest armbar in LFA history to win the title. If Royval wins this fight, I think it's going to be a finish most likely. And his opponent, you know, Tim Elliott, he badly needs a win here. He's probably on the verge of being cut for the second time in the UFC. Lost 2 fights in a row. He hasn't earned a victory since 2017. And he's actually been finished in both of those fights. He actually got finished by Deiveson Figueiredo, and then basically, I mean, essentially got knocked out, but was able to survive that and ended up going 3 rounds. So a very tough guy when he fought Askar Askarov, but dominated in those 2 fights. But those guys are ranked in the, you know, top 5, top 10. So it's not the worst loss, but losing a UFC debutant would not be a good look for Elliott. He's also 33 years old at this point, so at flyweight, that's pretty old. His striking has regressed to me. He's much slower with the movement, isn't quite as fast. He was throwing some nice low kicks in his last fight, showed some good pressure. He did throw some trademark blitz attacks, but inside, Elliott will, try to let his hands go, but he definitely relies on his chin, and that's caught up to him. I mean, he almost got knocked out cold in his last fight. He has his hands low, and it just leaves him readily available to punishment. I mean, a lot of Elliott's striking is just to goad opponents into commit so he can level change, so he's going to eat some shots, obviously. And he only has 3 KO TKOs, none since 2011. He has been knocked out just one time, so tough guy. And he has an extremely fan-friendly grappling style. I mean, he is an active seeker of the takedown, takes down a lot of guys, basically everyone he fights. Very good single and double leg. And in top position, he's never stagnant. He's always trying to improve his position. But he can be a little bit lazy at times inside of opponents' guards. He can let him get deep on subs, and you have to be careful with that against a guy like Royval. But Elliott is very good from side control. He's good at working that crucifix position. He'll look for arm triangles, good at forcing opponents to give their back. He'll look for rear naked chokes. Very good at just riding opponents out in that wrestling right position. Good front headlock as well. He'll snap guys down, good front chokes, a lot of variations. And Elliott's aggressiveness does put himself in bad positions. I mean, he'll dive into some triangles, he'll dive into some guillotines, and man, I mean, he's gonna get submitted like he has in the past and the future. And Elliott gets his head caught, like I said, a lot in chokes, and he can end up getting swept because of that, put on his back. And he's good at scrambling, he's hard to control. But it's just gonna be if he gets caught here, if he doesn't get caught. I mean, he does sometimes attempt head and arm throws. He got a few of them against Askar Askarov, but that does expose your back, which Ben Wynn was able to take the back, choke him out after he did that. He was submitted with a guillotine against Figueiredo recently. And he has been submitted 3 times, but he does have 8 submissions himself. And this is a close fight because if Elliott comes in here very sharp, he may just out-wrestle, out-grind Royval to a decision. Stay smart, stay out of his guard, grind him out. Royval could easily sub him or knock him out, though. And I'm going to go with Royval. I think at some point he's going to catch Elliott, submit him, or just be able to scramble back to his feet and outstrike him. I just think Elliott is a little bit past his prime. I think the up-and-comer's going to take it here. So I'm going with Brandon Royval to get the victory. And up next, we have a really interesting fight, a fight that a lot of people are split on, with Jamahal Hill taking on Clitson Abreu. And Jamahal Hill, he's set to make his second UFC start. He was victorious. He won a unanimous decision, and he looked pretty good on the feet. I mean, he's improving rapidly. He's getting better and better every fight. Only 7 pro fights. He hasn't been a pro that long. And Clitson Abreu is definitely the stiffest test of his career. If he can get the win, he may be fast-tracked to the top 15, though. Hill, he's a very fast, very high volume striker. He's a southpaw, but he will switch stances. He's long, and he uses that to his advantage very well. He's a sniper. I mean, very accurate jabs, good straights, really nice lead right hook, good straight left. Right after it, he'll set that combination up very well with feints. He'll throw nice rear uppercuts to start combinations. Very good at attacking the body with punches. He goes up down very effectively. Throws some nasty round and front kicks to the body. He constantly attacks the body, and he just tries to meld opponents. He'll use nice step in knees to the body, good high kicks. He's very accurate. He doesn't waste many shots. Hill landed over 100 significant strikes in his last match, which is very high volume in a 3-round fight for a light heavyweight, especially for his UFC debut. And his striking defense is not the greatest. He's good at pull countering. He does have a long reach, and it can make fighters nervous to throw at him, but he does lean back. He can float his chin, and he kind of relies on his chin. He relies on his height to defend shots, which is a bad habit. He ate some decent shots for Starko Stosic. He was dropped when he fought Daquan Townsend. Against explosive guys who can close the distance quickly, he may struggle a bit. He can be a bit heavy on his lead leg, eat some low kicks also. But he's young, he's improving, he's very confident. When he gets hurt, he will recover quickly, get back to pressuring, very good cardio, very strong mentally, I feel, and he will be undeterred by adversity. He has 3 KO TKO victories in his career, and he's never been finished by strikes. His grappling is a bit of a question mark. He's good in the clinch with knees. He will control fighters against the cage. Likes to shoot doubles in space, chain wrestle. Hill has good fight IQ, and he fights to his opponent's weaknesses. When he fought Daquan Townsend, although he's a striker, he took him down, dominated him. That was also 5 rounds, so he showed great cardio there. But his defensive wrestling is very questionable. He was taken down 6 times by Darko, even though he kept popping up very quickly. And Hill showed a good get-up game, but Darko isn't on the same level on the mat as Klitz and Abreu. So he has to be a little bit worried about that if he gets taken down. I've seen Jamahal Hill get swept by guys like Daquan Townsend, so definitely is still green on the mat. And he has to try to kind of treat the grappling like lava in this fight. If it gets down to the ground, try to stand up immediately. Don't give your back. And if you get in bad positions, try to stay very calm and ride it out, man. But, you know, I think if Klitson gets into a dominant position, it could be big trouble for Jamahal. But I do think that he'll, you know, he's improving with his takedown defense. He's a smart, analytical guy from his interviews that I hear. And I do believe he's going to come on point with better, improved takedown defense. Ready to go. Know the game plan and try to, you know, enact that very well. He is going to have a big reach advantage. And, you know, if he stays long, I think it's going to be hard for a guy like Abreu to get inside. But talking about Klitson Abreu, he is returning following that controversial split decision loss to Shamil Gamzatov. Abreu, you know, he's a salty record in the UFC. He's only 1-2, and he needs a victory here. I mean, this is a fun matchup because I do think Abreu poses problems for Hill on the feet and on the ground. Abreu, not the fastest guy, but he's a pressure striker. Very low volume, though. I mean, you see it on the screen, 1.53 strikes landed per minute. I mean, almost nothing, but you know, he has nice low kicks, and he checks low kicks well, which he could utilize in this fight if he has a smart game plan. Nasty round kicks to the body. He will throw some jabs, but mostly uses his right cross, looping hooks, overhands. Good counter combinations ending with kicks. He is improving as a striker. I do think he can backhill up and maybe, you know, land some bombs. He has a chance to connect. In space, I think Hill is far too fast. Probably is going to eat him up. Abreu can't go backwards in this fight. You know, he's going to be in big trouble. He's hittable to the body. He's a bit soft. I really feel like the body shots are going to add up from Hill. Abreu has power. He's dangerous. But just doesn't throw a lot of volume. It's hard to trust him on the feet and against a guy that throws so much volume that I believe is just a lot more athletic than him, a lot faster. But he does have 4 knockouts. He's been finished by strikes twice in his career, and he has beaten explosive strikers before, like Johnny Walker. But Klitson Abreu, he's very good jiu-jitsu black belt. If he can get on top of him in the center of the cage, it could be curtains, but Klitson will look to close the distance control in the clinch. Good body locks, good trips, decent level changes. He'll attack double legs, but he doesn't finish them very well. He will look to come up into a tight waist circle to the back, and he's pretty good at that. He has a ton of rear naked choke finishes in his career, and he's finished some pretty high-level guys, but a lot of the guys that he's finished are also grapplers themselves. And Abreu, he'll pull guard. He is solid off of his back, but he can lose rounds by laying there, being controlled. And he does have a couple submissions from his guard. He has good arm bars, a decent triangle, and he has a good back take. I mean, that's really his thing, is trying to get to the back. He has a good job of you know, attacking the rear naked choke and attacking the armbar from the back as well. Decent from side control, controlling there. And he's beaten guys like Sam Alvey, Johnny Walker, Victor Nemkov. He has some pretty solid wins. Pretty decent cardio as well. Good forward pressure, but I'm not sure he's going to hold up against someone with the volume and body attack of Hill. He could be tired and overwhelmed in the third round, I feel like. But he does have a massive experience advantage, multiple paths to victory. And it's a good fight, good test for both guys. It's a tricky fight, but I'm rolling with Hill to pass the test here. Hill is going to have a massive speed advantage. He strikes long range. I feel he's going to fight to a smart game plan. He's going to use angles, try to walk Abreu down. I don't think Abreu will have the physicality to take him down. If he does, Hill could be in trouble. But I think Hill will be working on his takedown defense, keep it standing. Abreu is a guy that likes to get takedowns in the clinch with trips, and I think it's going to be hard for him to close that gap against a guy like Jamahal Hill. He could shoot those double legs, try to come up into the clinch, but I feel like he's not going to be like shooting a ton of takedowns in this fight. I mean, he's not a chain wrestler. He's not a wrestler at all. He's a guy that likes to pull guard in a lot of fights. And man, I don't know. I just think even if he does get taken down, he just has to be very calm in there and relax, and he will maybe potentially be able to get back to his feet. I could see Hill pouring it on late, finishing the fight, or cruising to a decision. For Brayu to win, I think he needs a flash knockout or submission. And I'm going to go with Jamahal Hill here. I'm pretty confident that he's going to get the victory. And up next here, we have a fight with Billy Q taking on Spike Carlisle. And this is a fight that a lot of guys are split on, but Billy Quarantillo, he was successful in his UFC debut. He picked up that second round submission victory. And he's won 6 consecutive fights. He really turned around his career after losing on The Ultimate Fighter. He did get knocked down in the regional scene. It looked like his UFC dreams might have been over, but you know, he dusted himself off, proved a lot of people wrong. And when you look at his record, you'll see he's tested himself throughout his career. He's fought multiple UFC fighters. Definitely has a better resume in comparison to Spike Carlisle. But he's a pressure striker on the feet, good boxing, throws in combination. He'll mix it up body head. Really good jab. A really nice left hook as well. It's a long hook. He can land it from far out. And he usually follows that hook with the overhand right or a right hook to the body. He will throw some nasty hooks, uppercuts. He has some good body shots. And he likes to draw on opponents with forward pressure. He'll throw some low kicks, front kicks to the body. But kicks aren't really a big part of his game. He will throw a lot of naked low kicks that get him countered. So kicking, you know, isn't a smart thing for him. He holds his hands very low. He can walk into bombs in a lot of fights and gets rocked in a lot of fights, which is something that I'm nervous about with this fight. He can duck his head. He gets a little bit wide with his punches. And he just isn't the fastest guy overall. In this fight, I would stick to boxing and just try to, you know, go forward, you know, smother the power of Spike and eventually start grappling him. But he is a zombie. Where's the damage? You'll continue to come forward, willing to take damage, give it out. And he breaks a lot of guys that way. I mean, he takes their best shots, gives them it back, and they just, you know, can't hang like he can hang. But he has been knocked out with a head kick in the past. But he's won 4 consecutive fights via KO, TKO, and or submission, and 7 overall. So he's on a roll here, and he's a legit black belt. He's a strong grappler. In the clinch, he has good dirty boxing, good knees, body head. He'll jump on front chokes even from standing. In his last match, he was able to snap down Jacob Kilburn and attack the Anaconda in the first round. Showed some aggressive passing ability and just dominated him from the mount, from the back. Did whatever he wanted to him on top. And he showed good balance, good control in the mount. You know, good ground and pound. Good ability to ride opponents out, move from the mount to the back as they try to escape. Set up an arm triangle that was very close. And he eventually set up that triangle armbar, got the submission. And if he gets on top of Spike Carlisle, I think Spike is going to be in trouble because Billy is good at using combinations to create entries into his takedowns, double legs. And he gets opponents down most of the time by pressuring them and forcing them to shoot, though. He's not the greatest wrestler, so I feel like Spike will probably be able to defend the takedowns. I just think if he gets on top of Spike, it could pose some issues for him. And Quarantillo's takedown defense is not the greatest. Off of his back, he is dangerous in his guard. He will attack arm bars, triangles. He'll throw some hard elbows. And he will use the leg locks to sweep. But he can get dominated at times. He'll give up mount the back. Kamala Kirk was able to take his back. Saw Rogers kind of dominate him with grappling. Carlisle, he's going to have a chance early to, you know, finish the fight. And Billy, he has to be very careful in the first few minutes. If he can get Spike fatigued, I think he should dominate the fight. But, you know, it could happen where he could get just overwhelmed early. Spike Carlisle, he not stuck to the UFC fans in a huge way in his debut. I mean, the man was entertaining before the fight, during the fight, and after the fight. And fighting in front of no audience will be primetime TV with a guy like Spike Carlisle. But, you know, Carlisle, he was an underdog in his debut. He stepped up on short notice, got the win as an underdog again here. And, man, he's won 5 fights in a row. And if he could string some wins together, I mean, he could potentially be a rising star in the UFC. But extremely explosive, powerful, athletic guy, but very wild. I almost classify him as a Nico Price type guy, someone who will have some brutal knockouts but suffer a lot of losses as well. And he's not a great striker. I mean, he comes out fast. He'll crash with punches, throw a lot of kicks. But he has his hands low. He will throw some round kicks, front kicks to the body, left hook, good straight right hand, spinning shit. And his defense is not good, though. He isn't a UFC-level striker to me. I mean, he holds his hands completely down, very reckless. And when he lands, he hits hard, but he's just far too hittable, very stiff, I think, as well. He's a stiff guy, or a strong guy. He's very aggressive as well with the grappling. He loves the single leg. When he can get in, he's very strong. He'll elevate, slam guys, and loves to scramble. I mean, he'll jump on guillotines. He'll go for arm bars, triangles. He's definitely willing to give up position for submission. And when he can't get to dominant positions, he's ruthless. I mean, he'll unload with ground and pound. We saw that in his last fight. I mean, that finish was very nasty. He likes to take the back. He'll flatten opponents out. Very heavy hips, good rear naked chokes. But being too aggressive for submissions can get him in trouble. I mean, off his back, he isn't very technical. He just explodes back to his feet. And, I mean, against a black belt like Billy Q, I think that's going to stop working once he gets a little bit tired. In his last match, though, he did land a sick elbow when his opponent went for the takedown. He has short-range power. Fighters definitely have to be careful. Three rear naked chokes and a lot of ground-and-pound finishes. And he's a finisher. I mean, he's finished all his fights but one. But I will say his cardio looks bad in later rounds. I mean, I think he needs to get the job done early here and if he wants to win. And this is a fun fight because Spike is a wild card. You know, I think Billy Q is better striking and on the mat. Spike just always has that chance to close the show. And if he can get on top early, he has that chance to finish with ground and pound. He also could potentially land a high kick or, you know, some short-range power shot that changes the tide of the fight. But I think if Billy can avoid that early, then I think he's going to dominate, take over as the fight goes on. I could see him getting a late finish, dominant decision victory. I'm going to go with Billy Q here. He's just the more experienced, talented fighter. If he can't survive the early onslaught from the athletic juggernaut, he should win. So I'm going with Billy Q here. And I'm next with the main event of the prelims, the first female fight, Caitlin Chookagian versus Antonina Shevchenko. Very interesting fight here. Antonina had the best performance of her UFC career last time out. She took out Lucy Pudilova in round two. That was an awesome high-paced fight. And Shevchenko, she's always going to have that burden of living up to her sister. But she's a bad chick herself. I mean, she's in the top 15 of a UFC division. So you have to give her props, 39-1 as a professional kickboxer, Muay Thai practitioner. And Caitlin Chookagian, she's going to be looking to rebound after suffering her second career loss at 125 pounds. Finally got that title shot she worked hard for, but was dealt with, finished very easily. And she's in an interesting position here because she's getting an opportunity to kind of avenge a loss by defeating Valentina's sister. And I'm sure it's going to be a bit of deja vu for Chookagian for a second when they walk in the cage, announce the name. Chookagian also has to deal with seeing and hearing Valentina in the corner, you know, hey, which could be intimidating or a distraction. I mean, put down in the comments, what do you think is going to be louder, Caitlin Chookagian's tennis sounds or Valentina in the corner? When I first saw this fight on paper, I kind of favored Shevchenko. I thought it's probably going to be a striking match. Shevchenko, from what I remembered, hit a little harder, was a little faster, a little crisper. I do believe Shevchenko will be looking to implement a similar game plan on the feet to her sister. Not circle, stay at range, counter. And I don't think she has the capabilities to catch kicks and get takedowns and ground and pound like Valentina was, though. Watching Shevchenko strike, also, she isn't nearly as fast as Valentina. She does have some nice kicks, front kicks, side kicks, axe kicks, some good straight punches, nice jabs, some power. But she's a lot slower and she can get walked down. Her footwork, her distance control just isn't nearly as good. And Chookagian, on the feet, I believe it's going to be maybe a bit of a mirror match. Everyone knows Caitlin's game by now. Volume, straight punches, kicks. But not necessarily looking to land every shot or put big power on the shots. Chookagian, she does have a nice one too. I actually think she's faster, a little crisper on the feet with her striking. And I think she does have an advantage if she can get it to the ground. Obviously, she's a high-level grappler. I mean, I believe she has a black belt under John Danaher. But Shevchenko, I do think she has the advantage if she can get into the clinch. She has very good knees there. I think she's the more physical girl of the two. But I don't think Anina wants to be on the mat with a girl like Caitlin, who's a submission artist. She's improving there, but I think she could get submitted herself. And I actually think Shevchenko's best path to victory is to clinch, work the plum, mix that in with her range striking, try to counter Caitlin with the more impactful shots, because I just don't think she's going to have that grappling advantage like her sister Valentina did. But, you know, in the end, I actually think that Caitlin is going to be a little bit quicker at range. I think she's going to be able to implement her feints and walk down Shevchenko a little bit, back her up, land some of the flashier shots. And I think Antonina is going to be nervous to engage in the grappling because of the submission threat. So I'm going to go to Caitlin to win a decision with kind of her usual style. So the pick's going to be Caitlin Chookagian via decision. Up next here, first fight on the main card. I'm not going to be spending a lot of time on this fight. This is one of the least interesting fights on the card to me. Mackenzie Dern taking on Hannah Cyphers. You know, this is kind of a setup fight from the UFC. They're giving Mackenzie Dern one of the biggest girls in the 115-pound division, one of the smallest girls in Hannah Cyphers, a girl in Mackenzie Dern who's an elite black belt with pretty good power as well, against a girl, Hannah Cyphers, who has virtually non-existent takedown defense, and we've seen her overwhelmed on the ground by lower-level grapplers like Angela Hill. So, I mean, I think it's pretty self-explanatory what the UFC wants to happen here, what they're trying to do. But, you know, Mackenzie Dern, do I think she should be that big of a favorite? Not really. I mean, Hannah Cyphers is a tough, strong girl. She could maybe fend off some early takedowns. And she has some decent power herself, so maybe she could potentially catch Mackenzie flush on the chin as she's leaning back, hurt her. But more than likely, you know, man, I mean, this fight's going to go one way with Mackenzie Dern getting an early takedown, getting a submission, landing a big shot on Hannah Cyphers, hurting her, taking her down, finishing the fight. So, like I said, not going to spend a lot of time on this one, going with Mackenzie Dern. And I think she's probably going to get it done inside the distance here. But, I mean, I'm not running to the betting table to place money on Mackenzie Dern. Up next here, we have a very intriguing fight to me. Roosevelt Roberts taking on Brock Weaver. This is a fight that I've actually spent, some decent amount of time breaking down here. More than some other fights on the card. I watched quite a few fights from both guys. And Roosevelt Roberts, this is going to be his fifth UFC fight. He's going to be looking to build off that last performance, that victory. But, you know, it wasn't a great fight for him, in my opinion. He's 3-1 in the UFC, 11-1 overall. He is a big-time prospect. I mean, even Dana White said he's a fighter to look out for. And he was able to get a decision victory over a tough veteran in Russia. So it was good experience for him. But, you know, to me, Roberts, man, he fights the same in every fight. I don't see much improvement from him. And it looks like the oddsmakers feel he's going to be finishing Brock Weaver. He's a minus 300 favorite coming in here. So they have a lot of faith in him. But to me, Roosevelt Roberts is still very green. On the feet, good physical gifts, but really isn't the greatest striker. He is solid when he can go forward, when he can work behind his jab, his 1-2. He'll throw the straight down the middle. He has fast hands. When fighters stand in front of him, he will put some combos together. He'll mix in knees into his combinations. And he's good at switching stances. Maybe even looks like he could be ambidextrous. He has a lot of potential as a striker, but really hasn't put it together yet. He doesn't throw many kicks at all. With his frame, man, he should be very good at kicking. Roberts did throw one low kick, one body kick versus Yakolev, but, you know, that's more than he usually does, and that's all he threw in that fight. If he can start implementing some front kicks, some round kicks, he's going to be much better at controlling distance. And now he can get backed up very easily. He's flat-footed. Gets too involved in trying to counter moving backwards. He'll look to touch opponents with soft punches as they come forward, then time a knee up the middle or a harder shot. But the issue with that is Roberts isn't a power guy, and fighters can either slip or eat the shots, push him back, and when he gets his back up to the cage, he's stationary, he stands tall, he's susceptible to low kicks, to body shots, and he can get taken down, and he's a bit of a front runner. When he can go forward, he can dominate the fight, he'll get more and more confident, but if you walk him down, his volume wanes. He likes to try to walk fighters into one-shot home runs, but doesn't put combos together. And needs to improve his footwork, try to implement some kicks. That's going to make him much more dangerous. As of now, I don't really think his striking is that great. He does have 3 TKOs in his career. And I will say he's developing his grappler as well. He does look to mix it up. And the most dangerous part of his game is probably his guillotine. He doesn't shoot much in space. He likes to shoot when fighters can, or when he can get fighters against the cage. He does have a nice single leg, which essentially is one of the only takedowns he uses. I have seen him explode in some double legs, land some trips, but that's few and far between. In top position, Roberts is really not extremely dangerous, but he is a good rider. And that's what he looks to do mainly, stay on top, float in fruit position, win the fight. He won't look too hard for submissions or throw hard ground and pound much. He will sometimes threaten to sub to, pass or get some ground and pound in. If he can get to dominant positions, he does have a good mount. And once he gets there, he's very good at controlling with his length. Also good back take. He does have one career submission, which is a rear naked choke from top position, though. And really isn't a guy that does a lot of damage there either. Doesn't look very physically strong for the division. Kind of lacks physicality in tie-ups. He can be controlled against the cage. He can be taken down himself. And he also struggles against fighters who could set takedowns up with strikes like Vince Michel. And Vince Michel, once he realized that he was dominant with the grappling, he took him down at will. And Roberts' takedown defense, especially against chain wrestling, is poor. What he does have is that guillotine. I mean, you'll snatch that up, force fighters to their back, get on top. He was able to do that against Yakovlev. And that's basically what won him the fight in the third round. He is a tough, scrappy guy, and he won't be in it for three rounds. But he can break in fights. I mean, he even said it himself that he quit in the fight with Vince Michel. But, he seems at least dangerous all throughout the fight. Off his back, he's not very good, though. He'll lay flat, not offer much. Can be controlled, dominated. He did threaten an armbar in his last fight from his guard. I would say maybe he's improving a bit off of his back, but showed bad get-up game. Kind of was a fish out of water still. He does have four submissions, but his cardio is questionable. He's not the worst guy with the cardio, but it's not the greatest either. And this guy that he's fighting, Brock Weaver, he did get a win in his UFC debut, but not the way he wanted to. He was knocked out, but since it was due to a legal knee, he did get a DQ victory. And it was early in the fight, but Weaver was not looking great. He needs to have a bounce back performance here, show people why the UFC is high on him. And he is riding an 8-fight winning streak. He has a lot of confidence in himself. And he's going to have one thing most of Roberts' opponents don't have right off the bat, the physical tools to match him. Roberts, usually a much taller, longer fighter at lightweight. But Weaver is the same height with the same reach. And Weaver is just also a thicker, bigger frame guy who has competed at 170 pounds quite a bit. He's a forward pressure boxer. He's a dog. He loves the war. He's definitely the more technical boxer. He's a southpaw. He puts combinations together well, body head, fluid hands, and controls distance with feints, good jab, good 1-2, good lead right hook, and nice hook combos in close range. He'll go body head, likes to throw a left straight to the body to an overhand right. And Brock Weaver in some fights uses a lot of oblique kicks. He'll stand in front of opponents, feint, look to counter, but can be low volume. In other fights, he can pick the volume up, maul guys, move forward like we saw against Devin Smith. Weaver will throw some round kicks, but not often. He's not really a kicker, but he cuts the cage off very well. He's good at backing guys up, and he's good at using the right hook to tag opponents as they try to circle off the cage. And he'll try to engage guys in brawls, good chin. He thoroughly enjoys fighting, and that's a dangerous guy. I mean, he's fought in bare knuckle. He's fought guys like Joe Riggs, who's a huge guy that was probably juiced up. Definitely is going to be the better boxer in this match, I feel like. He has some professional boxing matches as well. And Weaver can get in some exchanges where he gets clipped, but overall his defense isn't bad. Early on in the fight, I think he is going to be at a big speed disadvantage. So he has to walk down Roberts, attack the body, get him back against the cage, not allow this fight to be in space. And at range, or if Roberts goes forward, I think he could piece Weaver up. Weaver needs to be the guy, the aggressor in this fight. He doesn't really have the biggest power. He only has two knockouts. But he has a good chin. He's very durable. He's only been finished by strikes one time. But having said that, he did get knocked out in his last match with that knee. So we have to see how he bounces back. Weaver, he's a good grappler, brown belt in jiu-jitsu, strong in the clinch, and he will dig some nice underhooks, good head positioning, good short shots, good knees, good body shots, good trips, body locks, And he's good with dirty boxing, doesn't let opponents rest. And he also will jump on guillotines, pull guard. I don't really like seeing fighters pull guard on guillotines. I don't think Weaver should do that in the UFC. But, you know, he's just good at just being dogged. I mean, if he gets guys down and they get back up, he'll mat return them. And he will take the back. He's getting much better at faking pull counters than ducking under into a blast double. And in top position, he's pretty heavy. Good ground and pound, good back takes. He was able to get that rear naked choke against Tyler Hill. Weaver was able to scramble back to his feet. He slow cooked Devin Smith by standing back up, keeping the pressure high in the clinch, landing the more shots. And after that initial burst from Smith, Weaver was largely able to defend all of Smith's shots against the cage, landing some big elbows to the head, some knees to the body. And Smith is a 170-pounder, so that was good to see. Weaver was taken down with some double legs in that fight, controlled against the cage. And what I didn't like seeing was he was taken down with a single leg versus Kasula Vargas. He was controlled there. And when Weaver gets taken down, he is hard to hold down. He will work to stand back up. And good at bellying down, standing back up. He will also give his back to stand up. And he can be a little bit slow in transitions, I've noticed. And I feel Roberts may be able to take his back, mount him, ride him out if he does get takedowns. So Weaver has to be ready to defend takedowns, work the get-ups, get out of bad positions, maybe survive a bad round. Weaver has 3 submissions, and he has been submitted 1 time. But he does have the cardio. He is a guy that will never break. And watching his debut, I feel he looked terrible. He was standing tall, very stiff, looked very slow off the blocks. And he let Vargas get the jump on him quickly, let Vargas back him up. Vargas landed big shots, got the takedown. I'm not sure if he was nervous or what. But I've seen him look much better in previous fights. The line to me is way off. Roberts, he's a fighter who struggles against forward pressure. And although he's a good at pull countering at times and walking fighters into punches, he will give up the center, just throw one at a time. And Weaver's a guy who's durable, who comes forward. If he can start to get the read on Roberts, Roberts is hittable, especially if he has his back against the cage. If Weaver can, you know, start to use his strikes and land on Roberts, that's where he could start pulling Roberts into takedowns. I think he could take him down, control him against the cage. Roberts isn't very good off his back. I could see Weaver just controlling him. And if Roberts does get up, you know, I could see him hitting some mat returns on Roberts. I don't think he will sub him, but I could see him wearing him out, grinding on him. Roberts is the physically smaller man. I think Weaver will have a decent strength advantage. Roberts can mix it up too, though, but usually only takes guys down, like I said, when he can get their backs against a cage. With Weaver's forward pressure style, I'm not sure he's going to get as many chances at the takedown here. I'm nervous that if Roberts does get him down or back him up, he will dominate the fight, though, especially early. If Weaver gets off to another slow start, he could get finished in round one. Roberts, he's much faster. He could turn him off with a knee, with a flurry and an exchange. Could take him down and just control him for 3 rounds. I think as the fight progresses, both guys get their reads. I think Weaver is going to start to hit the body, slow down Roberts. It is the small cage. And I think the pressure is going to start to turn the tide. He needs to be locked in from the word go, though. Roberts could exploit Weaver if he takes him down. You know, I worry he's going to be able to take his back, dominate, control in top position. But I'm going to go with Weaver, though. I think the line should be much closer. I think Weaver's going to pressure, work the boxing, get his back against the cage, get some takedowns, get some control time against the cage in the clinch, on the ground, and get a decision 29-28. I think he's going to drop the first round, but pull out down the stretch and get the victory. So I'm going with Brock Weaver to move his UFC record to 2-0. You guys miss Kevin Holland? I mean, he's back. He's taking his second fight in 2 weeks, making that quick turnaround after he made quick work of his last opponent, finished him in less than 2 minutes. And Holland actually got hit 0 times, so he should be injury-free. And he's making the move down to 170 pounds, which he's been talking about for a long time. He's always been a small middleweight. I mean, we saw him weigh 182 in his last fight, so don't think the weight cut is going to be a huge issue for him. And he should be a pretty big welterweight. And he's going to be looking to, you know, get 2 victories in 2 weeks, which is something that a lot of guys in the UFC haven't done. I think he's going to tie Chaz Skelly. Daniel Rodriguez is going to be looking to play spoiler for the second time, though, in 2 UFC fights. He was a big underdog going into his fight with Tim Means, but finished him in exciting fashion. Once again, is a big underdog here. And Rodriguez, he's won 7 consecutive fights. He's finished all 7. He's a rough, rugged guy. He's going to be ready for the moment. I don't think he's going to be, you know, flustered by the no crowd, by fighting a guy like Kevin Holland. I think he's going to be ready to go. And this fight is just going to come down to if Daniel Rodriguez can, you know, implement his game of forward pressure striking, working those, you know, hard combinations inside, and maybe even looking for some takedowns, because I do believe that Kevin Holland is very easy to take down. Rodriguez, I mean, he's a 10th planet guy. He's a decent grappler. So maybe if he works takedowns, he could just grind on Kevin Holland. But Holland, I think on the feet, is going to have a lot of success, man. I mean, he's going to be way longer than this guy. He throws kicks, which Daniel Rodriguez, besides low kicks, doesn't really do. So I think that his kicks to the body, his long straight punches, are going to cause a lot of issues for Rodriguez. I mean, we saw Timmy piecing Rodriguez up with some straights. And, you know, Rodriguez just got Timmy to brawl with him. Timmy was crashing in that fight, crashing the distance, gave Rodriguez a lot of opportunities to land shots. I think Holland is going to stay smart, stay long, easily outstrike him. I mean, Holland has those nasty front kicks to the body, those snap kicks. He'll attack the body with punches, round kicks, and we've seen Daniel Rodriguez hurt to the body before. And Rodriguez, you know, he's a guy that does have a lot of power. He can knock you out. But Kevin Holland is taking bombs off guys like John Phillips, who knocks guys clean out at 205, at 185. He's beating guys like Jeff Neal, who hits like a truck. I mean, Kevin Holland is a sick chin. I mean, never been finished by strikes. I feel like the grappling, Holland is a better grappler as well. I mean, he could potentially even take down Rodriguez. I think he'd catch Rodriguez in a choke. And I'm just liking Kevin Holland here, man. I feel like he's the cleaner striker on the feet. I don't think Rodriguez is going to land very many shots to the head. When he does, I think Kevin is going to be able to eat him. I think that Kevin's actually going to hurt him to the body with a kick, finish him with a ground and pound, or finish him with a submission. So I'm going with Kevin Holland to get his second finish in 2 weeks. And I think that at 170, it could potentially be a problem for a lot of guys, because I do believe Daniel Rodriguez is good as well. But, I mean, he's taking this fight on very short notice. He's fighting a guy that's been training for a while, just had a fight. So he's obviously going to be in better shape, I imagine, than Daniel Rodriguez. Going to be the bigger guy. Got to go with Kevin Holland here. I'm going Kevin Holland to win inside the distance. Up next here, co-main event. Not a great fight. I don't really know why this is a co-main event. But Blago Ivanov taking on Augusto Sakai. And you know, this is a good fight, a close fight. Blagoy, you know, he displayed his legendary toughness in his last fight once again. He went to war with Derek Lewis, ate all of his shots, gave some of his own. Split decision loss. One of the best chins in the sport, man. I mean, he's one of the main training partners for Francis Ngannou, so that may almost be a necessity. And he's a tough, savvy veteran. I mean, he fights at a slow, deliberate pace. Most of the time, he's a counter striker. He gives up the center of the cage. Fights moving backwards, good southpaw, good lead hand, good jab, really nice straight left body head. He'll throw some hard 1-2s, nice check right hook. He'll land it going backwards, and some quick hands in the pocket, good hooks, uppercuts. He holds his hands a bit low, but he has good head movement, counters. Isn't the fastest or most athletic guy, doesn't hit the hardest, doesn't have the greatest cardio. But he's just a winner, man. Very skilled, and he can take it. And he's never been finished by strikes. 6 knockouts. And he's a solid grappler, but really doesn't use it much. He finally did show it off in his last fight with Derek Lewis, though. He likes to work in the clinch. He can allow himself to get held against the cage, controlled a bit. But he's good at finding his moments to off-balance his opponents, bring him to the floor. Nice trips, nice throws. Really nice standing 10-finger guillotine. And he'll use it to not only finish the fight, but force his opponents to their backs where he can get on top. Good job of getting into side control. He'll try to work the crucifix, land short shots, look for subs like Kimuras, Americanas. He'll, move to the mount, take the back, good rear naked choke. I haven't seen many people attempt to take Ivanov down, but has been submitted one time. He has 6 submissions in his career. His cardio isn't the greatest, so if fighters could push the pace, I do believe... You know, he will gas, but, you know, he's going to be a tough out, good matchup for a young up-and-comer like Sakai. And Augusto Sakai, he's been looking good in the UFC. He's coming off the best performance of his career his last time out. Quickly blitzed Marcin Tybura, took him out in the first round. And he's on a roll. He's 3-0 in the UFC. He's won 5 fights overall, forward pressure striker. He isn't the fastest guy. Fighters who can stick and move are definitely going to give him issues, in my opinion. And he relies on his forward pressure to slow guys down. He tries to cut the cage off, back him towards the fence, make it small. And when he can get fighters back near the fence, that's where he will close the distance with combinations. At range, he's very low volume. He will throw some low kicks, front kicks. Nice jab, good 1-2. He'll wing some power hooks, overhands. And he's deceptively athletic, closing the distance with some flying knees, some head kicks that he throws. Usually finishes fighters with attrition, though. He isn't a one-punch guy. And he fights at a deliberate pace himself. But when he has an opponent hurt, he can pick up, throw long combinations, try to finish the fight. He does have 10 KO TKOs. He's going to be the much more durable fighter. That's one of his big advantages. He is a very durable guy. I mean, he's not going to be... I'm talking about just in general, he's going to be the much more durable fighter. I mean, not necessarily in this fight. He will be able to eat shots, continue to come forward. And, he's never been finished by strikes either himself. And he isn't a grappler. He will really try to wrestle. His takedown defense isn't bad either. He, will use underhooks to try to deny takedowns, but he can be controlled against the fence. He was taken down by Chet Congo multiple times. He will work in the Muay Thai plum. And he's very heavy, so he will lean his weight on opponents, try to wear them out. And, it's going to be interesting to see if Blagoy gets him down, what Sakai can do off of his back, because I haven't seen much of him off his back in recent years. But he's not a submission guy, no submissions, isn't really a guy that's dangerous on the ground. This is a close fight. I feel as if Blagoy is the technically better guy. He's faster, he hits harder. But the volume of Sakai could even the stage. And Sakai is going to be the guy going forward, trying to back Blagoy up, unload combos. The issue is Sakai doesn't have the fastest feet, doesn't cut the cage off well, and I feel Blagoy will be able to counter and angle off. It could be a competitive fight, but I'm actually going to side with the veteran Ivanov here, going with Blagoy to get the victory. And I do feel like the decision prop is actually good for this fight. I think it's likely going to go to decision. Up next here, the main event, we have an awesome fight. Former champ Tyron Woodley taking on Gilbert Dorinho Burns. And interesting fight, right? I mean, a couple years ago, even on paper, I mean, Woodley has to be favored massively. He is a pretty sizable favorite, but he's still not even minus 200. But when you look at it just on paper, I mean, Woodley is the career 170. And these guys are pretty similar, right? I mean, they both like to get it to the ground. They're powerhouse wrestlers. I mean, we've seen Gilbert Burns really improve his grappling. I mean, dominate guys on the ground with takedowns like Alexei Kunchenko, takedown Gunnar Nelson a couple times. And, with Tyron Woodley, though, I just don't think he's going to be able to take him down. And but they're similar in that way because they both look for takedowns and they both are kind of counter fighters that have big power. I mean, Dorinho maybe does go forward a little more, does up the volume a little more, but both guys have a big overhand that can knock you out, and that's what they're looking for the whole fight. And if they land it, it could be curtains. I mean, we've seen both guys get some brutal one-punch knockouts. I would say Gilbert Burns maybe is a little bit better on the ground in top position with submissions, obviously. But the likelihood of him taking down Woodley is just not very high. I mean, we've seen Woodley fight these guys like Damian Maya. We've seen him fight really elite jiu-jitsu guys with good grappling. They haven't been close to being able to take him down. He did struggle in the past with guys like Jake Shields, but Jake Shields is a college wrestler, elite wrestler. He's not a jiu-jitsu guy that's learned wrestling, so he's on a different level of wrestling than Gilbert Burns. And when you look at it here, I mean, Gilbert Burns is actually the much more active takedown seeker. I mean, Tyron barely wrestles, actually, in most of his fights. Gilbert almost averages 3 takedowns per 15 minutes. But look at the accuracy there for Gilbert Burns. 39% on the takedown. And the takedown defense for Tyron Woodley is 92%. I mean, that's a huge, significant gap there. I just don't think that he's going to be able to take him down, most likely. I think that it's going to be a fight on the feet. And I do think that probably Gilbert Burns is going to be walking him down, probably trying to work the low kick. But it's not like Gilbert Burns has technical striking where he can up the volume and really be aggressive against a counter striker like Tyron Woodley. I mean, Woodley's going to be the more explosive guy. He's going to be the bigger guy. I think he has the more one-punch power. And I think Gilbert Burns, I mean, both these guys have nice low kicks. I mean, we've seen Woodley use those low kicks in multiple fights. We've seen Burns use them in multiple fights. Both of them are pretty low volume. I mean, looking at it, maybe Burns throws a little bit more. I mean, barely 3.2 strikes, 2-2 strikes versus 2.64. Both absorb pretty similar amounts. I mean, you have to remember Tyron Woodley has been in, 15-minute or 25-minute fights. He's just coming off a fight where he absorbed a lot of shots against Usman, so it's a little bit skewed there. And, man, I just feel like Woodley, he's bigger, faster, stronger, more athletic, better wrestling, better striking. And it just comes down to the mindset, like always with Woodley. I mean, what is he thinking about? Is he thinking about the rap? Gilbert Burns has fought four times since Woodley's last fought. He's been in there with a lot of legit guys. He's coming off a big knockout off Damian Maia. He's very confident. He has already fought in a gym with no crowd in Brazil, so that has to be helpful. But man, I mean, this is a huge significant step up. I mean, we saw what Tyron Woodley did to Damian Maia with a torn labrum for 5 rounds. I mean, he destroyed him. Maia never landed a takedown, never did much of anything to Woodley. And man, I mean, I feel like Woodley is just going to use his style, that counter striking. And I think he's going to land a shot and knock Gilbert Burns out. I just don't think that Gilbert Burns is going to be able to take that power on the chin. We've seen Tyron Woodley eat a lot of significant shots. He has been knocked out in the past, but I don't think Gilbert Burns is going to have the striking to threaten him, man. I think Tyron Woodley's, just him being so locked and loaded all the time with that shot, is going to give Gilbert Burns trepidation to throw punches. I think he may walk him down, but he's just going to be a little bit frozen in there. And I think Tyron is going to be able to get off a little bit more. I think he's going to get Gilbert a little bit flustered, a little bit frustrated, maybe get Gilbert shooting some bad takedown attempts. I think maybe Gilbert will get tired and get knocked out. Or I could see Woodley coming out here sparking him in the first round. I'm actually kind of confident that Woodley's going to go in here and get it done if he looks good at all. I mean, he is 38. Gilbert Burns is peaking. Gilbert Burns is the young up-and-comer. I mean, if Tyron Woodley is truly done, maybe Gilbert Burns will come in here and do what Kamaru Usman did to him, dominant for 5 rounds. But, man, Usman is the best of the best right now. One of the best welterweights we've ever seen. And before that, Tyron Woodley was taking out everyone. I mean, people forget the fight right before that. Darren Till didn't land one strike on him in a title fight. So, man, I mean, I'm going to go with Tyron Woodley here. I'm going to hope the vintage Woodley comes back, comes out. And I think if he does, he's going to get a dominant victory, get a finish, and it's going to be a knockout. So I'm going with Tyron Woodley via knockout here. I think he's going to get it done, take out Gilbert Burns. And then for the parlay of the week and the most confident pick, my most confident pick is going to be Casey Kenney, minus 270 now. So it is a little bit steep, but I think Casey Kenney could be an even bigger favorite in that fight. I really believe that he's going to get the victory there. The parlay of the week is going to be Casey Kenney and Jamahal Hill, which Jamahal Hill is actually only minus 125 right now. So you're going to get a decent comeback return on that parlay. Pretty confident that both those guys are going to get it done. Looking at the odds here, just looking at a few fights, there are some lines that I think are a little bit off. There are some fights, that I think are definitely bettable. So like I said earlier in the video, make sure to check out that link in the bio, my MMA Oddsbreakers premium pick. Support, the channel, support MMA Oddsbreakers over there. And, a lot of the money that I make over there will come back into the channel. It'll also help you make money as well, give you more of a read on what type of bets I like to place. I will be giving more type of insight on there, exactly why I'm placing the bets, what I like to see when I place a bet on a certain guy. So thanks for supporting if you are going to do that. Thanks for watching the whole video. Make sure to drop a comment, like, subscribe. And we're going to be doing good this week most likely. I'm feeling pretty good, feeling pretty confident. We're going to be trying to rule that, parlay that we won last week into this week. We've been doing good predicting some pretty decent upsets on the main cards and the main events recently. This main event, I don't think there's going to be an upset necessarily, but hopefully we can keep it going with some decent picks, decent predictions. Thanks for watching, guys, and check you guys later.